On this first Monday of 2021, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're diving into the Wisconsin PFAS action plan published last month. PFAS are known as forever chemicals, and once they're released into our environment, they do not break down. They build up in our bloodstream and organs. The Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, part of the CDC, has found in studies that exposure to PFAS may heighten the risk of some forms of cancer. And their recent statement on COVID says more research is needed to understand how PFAS exposure may affect illness from COVID-19. What questions do you have about PFAS management in our state? What action do you want from lawmakers? It's 800-642-1234 to join in. Darcy Foss is administrator of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Environmental Management Division. Darcy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate, for having me this morning.
Well, give us some historical context first. You've been with the DNR for decades. When did our state realize that this group of chemicals known as PFAS, that they pose a significant health risk to people and to our environment?
Well, Kate, I have to admit this kind of came in two separate waves. Early on in the early 2000s, when Minnesota realized they had a situation with 3M, we did a little bit of testing in 2008 and 2009 and really didn't find much at very high levels. But again, the science really wasn't there to detect a lot of the PFAS compounds or detect them at minute enough levels. And so we kind of took our a pause on looking at PFAS because of the science was indicating we really didn't have an issue in Wisconsin. And then again, it came up because the military in the last couple of years started sampling some of their bases due to the use of firefighting foam around the country and in Wisconsin again. And so we started to take a relook at PFAS, and our neighboring states of Michigan and Minnesota were also doing the same. So we all were kind of taking a second look at PFAS as the science got better.
At first, PFAS contamination, as you mentioned, seemed to be limited to a firefighting foam hazard, but now it seems like it's a larger problem across manufacturing. How extensive are PFAS in industry processes, especially here in Wisconsin?
That's a great question, Kate, and we're going to try and answer that with partnerships with business and local governments. I'm not sure we have a really good feeling right now on how widespread it is. We do have indications on what it could be based on a lot of the work the state of Michigan has done, but we're in the process of starting to sample businesses, wastewater. We're going to be moving ahead with some municipal well sampling, and we're starting to routinely sample our surface waters and fish, not only for mercury and PCBs, but now also for PFAS. So we're going to kind of step out from there and really see how widespread it is.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Darcy Foss, who is with the Wisconsin DNR, and she's going to be breaking down here the state's plan to address current and future PFAS contamination. Darcy, let's look at this council, this Wisconsin PFAS Action Council. How did it form?
Yeah, so when Governor Evers came into office, one of the first things he wanted to do is have the year of clean drinking water. And we realized that around the country and in the state, we were finding PFAS in our water. So in addition to the year of clean drinking water, Governor Evers passed Executive Order 40, which directed DNR to work with other state agencies, public businesses, and local governments to devise kind of a blueprint for where we should be going to figure out what's happening with PFAS in our states, its impact, and then how we could address what's going on. So that was the council. It was over 15 state agencies that met over the last year, and we put together a plan that we gave to the governor and sharing with the legislature.
Did you find that these meetings were productive, that it was important to have multiple agencies at the table?
I do think it was, Kate, and I think it not only we shared what we were doing, which we may not have known, that we were all working on different things, but also I think it raised the awareness amongst all the state agencies of the prevalence of PFAS and you know, just and how it touches what we do as state agencies, from the university to the Veterans Administration to Military Affairs to the DNR to our health group. So yes, I think it was extremely valuable to have that conversation.
And how did the council hear from the public on the issue of PFAS? How did you reach out?
Well, we did a number of things. Every meeting, obviously, was open. It was televised through the DNR and many times on Wisconsin Eye. Early on in February of last year, we had, for a couple weeks, we had an open public survey. People could online or through the mail tell us what they wanted us to do about PFAS. And again, every month or every other month, we met, and part of that end of that meeting was open forum. We had a number, a couple of advisory groups, and then at the end, when we put the plan together, we put it out for public input.
So how does this plan advise lawmakers, advise policymakers on where we go next with PFAS in trying to get our arms around these thousands of chemicals that are out there and that we can't get rid of?
Yeah, that's a great question, Kate. And I think what we tried to do, again, is a blueprint for what we could be doing in the next 2 to 5 years to really move Wisconsin ahead on the issue of addressing PFAS, not only in the prevention aspect, and some of that is simply, Kate, education on the products you're using. If you had a choice and you had something you could use that was just as effective that didn't have PFAS in it, whether you're a consumer like me in the morning on what products you're using to get ready for the day, or a business, you know, can you use something that doesn't have PFAS in it? And then also what happens when it does get released into the environment? How can we address that? So, you know, we're working on both aspects of that. But this really is gives the policymakers choices as a state on here's some things we could do. Which one of these do you folks want to move ahead on? And that really was the point of this.
Darcy, how do we know? How do we know if our waterproof shoes or our nonstick pots and pans have PFAS in them?
Well, that's a great question, and it's pretty challenging to figure that out. There's a certain laws that say if something's less than a certain percent in ingredients, they really don't have to list the ingredients. There's proprietary, you know, secret corporate ingredients that we're not aware of. Some people will say that this doesn't include PFOA or PFOS, which is some of the older PFAS compounds, but there's 5,000 of these. So it doesn't really say it doesn't include any of the other PFAS compounds. So it is hard to know. I know a lot of people have called manufacturers and asked them. I know local governments have done that with their firefighting foam. And so I think it's just heightening the awareness of consumers. And one of the recommendations is that we have a labeling standard in Wisconsin that would require manufacturers to list whether or not PFAS in the ingredients in those products.
Darcy Foss, administrator of the DNR's Environmental Management Division. We're discussing a new plan on PFAS management here in Wisconsin. States like Wisconsin are proposing limits or guidelines for PFAS in drinking water. Are you worried about these forever chemicals in your tap water? What do you want to know about levels of detection in our state? What environmental policies do you want lawmakers to act on with PFAS? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're discussing PFAS contamination in Wisconsin on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The DNR published a state action plan that aims to set standards to clean up contamination of the forever chemicals known as PFAS and prevent future pollution. PFAS are a group of chemicals, as we've been talking about, used to make coatings and products that are resistant to heat, oil, stains, grease, water, super durable. They're found in clothing, furniture, insulation, nonstick cookware. The list goes on from the CDC. Do you work in an industry that uses PFAS? What would you like regulation and standards to consider? 800-642-1234. We have DNR Administrator of the Environmental Management Division, Darcy Foss, as our guide. Darcy, looking at the situation with water, PFAS exposure typically results from contaminated drinking water. What is the state of our drinking water in the status of PFAS?
That's a good question, Kate, and we're working on that. Back in 2013, EPA required a number of municipalities in Wisconsin to test for PFAS, but the standard of testing was a little less rigorous, and so the laboratory methods have gotten a little more refined. So we may have more concerns than we are aware of. And look at Madison, Wisconsin, when 2013, when we took samples across the state for PFOA and PFOS, which are two of the substances, Madison had no detects, but as the laboratory methods have gotten more precise, they have found PFAS in every one of the wells in Madison. We've got a number of communities that have PFAS detections in some of their wells. Three in particular, have shut down some of their wells because of PFAS in those wells.
What support does the plan provide for communities like Marinette where there has been PFAS contamination?
Yeah, so Marinette is a unique community, and Peshtigo, in the fact that they have a manufacturer in that area that manufactures firefighting foam with PFAS in it and has done so for decades. And that material has been released into the sediment, surface water, the groundwater, potentially the air pathway. And so this basically would put together a recommendation that local governments, there'd be a grant program created and a loan program created to help local governments investigate and sample people's private wells. For example, the town of Peshtigo is all on private wells. And so it just really would step out and do that as far as other things like education and communication. But I think right now for Marinette, the key would be some funding to help them analyze the problem as well.
And from a policy angle here, there was a temporary rule to regulate firefighting foam that contains PFAS that went into effect last month. The legislature's Rules Committee made changes to it. Can you give us some context to the ramifications?
Yes, this is a kind of a narrow piece of legislation that simply, and the rule itself, simply addresses folks who test firefighting foam that contains PFAS, whether it's their fire suppression system in the ceiling of their commercial building, or if it's a big manufacturer like up in the Marinette area that has a large testing facility. It simply says this is how they should treat, store, and dispose of that material. So it's more of a prevention law that was to prevent future problems out there. So there were some changes made. We still feel like that's a strong piece of legislation and an emergency rule that's in place that gives strong direction to industry on how they should treat or dispose of that foam that's generated through testing.
But business groups like Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce have said that the foam rule is too stringent. How are business groups involved in the process here in understanding and drafting the PFAS action plan?
Yeah, so first, we had all kinds of open meetings, invited industry there. We did have some industry that helped participate in that. So the action plan is one thing. They were also involved actively in the rule. The industry's biggest concern was the aspect of how we thought they should be when that foam is generated from testing and you've got a bunch of literally lots of foam there, mm-hmm. how that water should be treated if that's how you were going to manage it and dispose of it. And so we basically took what the industry standard is out there, which is what's called activated carbon, which if you think of your Brita filter with your drinking water and you've got your container you put in your fridge with the little carbon cartridge in it, this would be an industrial sized series of Brita filters. And we just basically put in the rule what industry standards was that was out there right now.
We have Wisconsin DNR's Darcy Foss. As we understand the PFAS contamination in our state, how to management and the new PFAS action plan, you can join in. Do you live near a PFAS contamination site? What impact has it had? Do you work in an industry that uses PFAS? What would you like to know about regulation and standards? What questions do you have about PFAS? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Darcy, what does this plan say about the future, the cleanup, the management of PFAS contamination sites in our state?
Well, it says that we're going to have to work together, not only the state agencies. You know, we're really leaning on the University of Wisconsin and their, you know, world-class scientists to help us, but also to look to other states to work together to try to address this. And the new Biden administration is coming in and has identified PFAS as one of their top areas of concern. So I think from the once it's been discharged to the environment, it's very difficult to resolve those issues once it gets into the soil, groundwater, your drinking water. And we're really trying to work together to find solutions on how to do this cost effectively and pragmatically. So I think it's really the whole how do we restore the environment is kind of a we're going to have a big partnership here and trying to resolve how to do that best, Kate.
You mentioned other states. Have other states taken steps that Wisconsin could emulate?
I think if you look at Michigan, and we're looking at lessons learned from Michigan, we are going out and sampling a number of wastewater treatment facilities now for PFAS, and they did that across the state. And they also sampled all their municipal systems, and we are going out with a little bit of federal money that we received in one of the last defense bills, and we're going to sample 250 municipal water systems. So we are learning that way, and they're learning from us as well. We've done a little sampling on deer that they hadn't done, and Michigan had done that. My apologies. Minnesota is emulating what we're doing with deer. So we're kind of all learning from each other on that. And then we're sharing what we're doing with fish with Michigan and Minnesota, as well as foam. We've seen a lot of foam incidents on water and trying to work together on understanding, you know, the cause of the foam and how to dispose of it.
When you mentioned the 250 municipal water system samplings, what is a time frame for that?
We hope to do that early this spring. So hopefully in the next several months, we'll take a step forward. And then the PFAS action plan actually then recommends that we dedicate funds to sample all 1,700 municipal systems, but also non-municipal drinking water systems that we think could be at risk due to their location. So those would be recommendations to, you know, kind of close that loop as part of the PFAS action plan.
You mentioned education as part of this action plan. How important is education or figuring out what we as residents can do as part as trying to find a fix for PFAS contamination?
Yeah, that's a great question again. And I think we're all in a learning mode here with PFAS. You know, we all, some refer to it as emerging contaminant, but it's been around since the 1930s. And I think this is just a product of the science of manufacturing is ahead of the science of, you know, in environmental cleanups and environmental protection. So I think we really need to come to a common understanding where this is. I think there's some businesses out there and local governments, if they knew that this was in the products that they were using and there was an effective alternative that didn't contain PFAS, that they would probably move in that direction. So I think that's kind of where we need to go is, you know, what's in the products we're using. And as consumers, as I mentioned, making choices on using products with or without PFAS.
Darcy, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, Kate. Appreciate it.
Darcy Foss, Administrator of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Environmental Management Division. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Wisconsin Democratic Party Chair Ben Wickler is with us. We take a look at the party's priorities. That's after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.